Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us. We're broadcasting all over the United States, all over the world. I appreciate you taking your time to listen in. We have tens of thousands of people who listen each day over the minutes each day over the telephone. In fact, we're number one in all of North and South America and Canada out of 5,000 plus stations. They're listening by just taking the telephone and dialing 712-775-6850. Today's one of those programs where I wished it were longer because we have so much to share. First, there's some really interesting research from the Concordia University in Montreal. They believe that they have discovered something that could help extend lifespan of the cell substantially. Now, it's based upon over 10,000 trials to screen for plant extracts that would increase the chronological lifespan of yeast. Why yeast? Because, cellularly speaking, aging progresses similarly in both yeast and humans. It's the best cellular model to understand how the anti-aging process takes place. So I'm going to tell you what they discovered, something that we're not using, that now we can. Also, for those of you who want to have a better aging brain, from a university, the University of Medicine in Berlin, the omega-3 fatty acids shown to exert a very positive effect on the aging brain. And also, from the University College London and Bristol University in the United Kingdom, soil microbes, that's healthy dirt, helps relieve stress and combat depression. How's that possible? I'll explain. And also, new research on the more magnesium, the healthier your arteries are. Well, we need healthy arteries. So I'll explain how that works, and also boron. Boron is an underutilized, almost non-discussed trace mineral. Well, once I tell you what it does, I think more of you will pay attention to make sure that you get it. Good news there. And 1 in 4 seniors have superbugs. That's a bad thing. These are killer bugs on your hands after a hospital stay. University of Michigan. A short piece that should make us think. I didn't know this. I don't know how many of you are aware of it. If you have children, probably very much so. How much time a child, teenager, spends on looking at their screens, on their cell phones and their little computers each day. And what that does in class, now that they've allowed children to bring their cell phones to class, because otherwise the children didn't feel good. And today, everything's about making them feel good. Not helping them learn, not helping them mature, not helping them be disciplined, not helping grow up. We just want them to feel good. But what if they're spending the most of that class on the internet or texting her? Little short piece, very revealing. And my guest in the second part of our program is Professor Joseph Hickman. We're going to talk about the burn pits of Afghanistan and Iraq and the Defense Department's denial over its threat to human life and the environment. Professor Hickman, professor at Seton Hall University School of Law and a senior research fellow at its Center for Policy and Research, was a former Marine and an Army sergeant, and he worked on a variety of sensitive operations worldwide. He also was the guard at Guantanamo, who blew the whistle. And his revelations of abuse of prisoners at Guantanamo resulted in his award-winning story in Harper's Magazine and his book, Murder at Camp Delta. His most recent book is The Burn Pits, The Poisoning of American Soldiers. Interesting, because I wrote about this in 1994, and I have a new two-part series article out just last week. It's posted on Progressive Radio Network. And what's the problem with free trade? Dave Johnson, Our Future. First, for the seniors in our audience, meaning anyone, let's just say for our argument, over 50, this in the University of Michigan, quote, one in four seniors is bringing along stowaways from the hospital to their next stop. Superbugs on their hands. Moreover, seniors who go to a nursing home or other post-acute care facility will continue to acquire new superbugs during their stay. That's according to the University of Michigan's research published today in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Internal Medicine. The study focused on patients who had recently been admitted to a hospital for a medical or surgical issue and temporarily needed extra medical care in a PAC facility before fully returning home. And what they found was the 24% of them had at least one and super bugs, and these are bugs that can kill you, like MRSA. And it shows you two things. A, it shows you how absolutely toxic these environments are. And yet we've been told that, gee whiz, they're clean. They're not clean. They're not washing their hands. Not even all surgeons properly clean their hands before surgery. Then when people go into a room, you're assuming that the room has been completely sanitized. It has not. If they really wanted to sanitize a room, they would go in and they would vaporize it with a hydrogen peroxide infusion and then rub down the surface, because it's the rubbing of the surface of your hands. That's why soap works when you're rubbing your hands. It's the exfoliation or defoliation which breaks the cell wall of the virus or bacteria. And they're not doing that. They're not doing doorknobs and handles, the very things I've suggested if you live with other people, that you simply take a paper towel, soak it in alcohol or hydrogen peroxide, and rub the doorknob of your front door, all doors, your water faucet, the washing drying machine, your where you flush the toilet handle of the toilet seat. And let's say a man goes in and he lifts the seat up. If his hand's contaminated and you go in and sit down on that seat, you can be infected by what was on his fingers. Wiping down refrigerator and freezer doors. And you do this twice a day. But in a hospital, you'd be far more vigorous because a lot of the bacteria spread vis-a-vis breathing or out of someone's sores. So just let you know, do not trust ever any hospital ever under any condition ever. They are places where people can be and are infected. Next up, we want to make sure that people have healthy bodies, and one of the nutrients is boron. Boron is B-O-R-O-N. You don't need a lot. It's a very important trace mineral, and even though it's a trace mineral, boron still possesses biological activity. A study at the University of Illinois quantified boron levels in human tissue sites, including bone, skin, and muscle. And the positive effect of boron is really important. For example, it protects your bones. Just about 3 milligrams per day helped prevent a lot of calcium, magnesium from being excreted. And also, it increased the levels of the hormones 7-beta-estradiol and testosterone. And these changes suggest that boron could have a value to postmenopausal women who would otherwise be increasing bone deterioration. It can help stabilize it. Also, it boosts our joint comfort, meaning you'll be less likely to have poor joint circulation and lubrication. And then it helps your brain, too. A study compared the effects of taking up to 3 milligrams of boron per day, and it measured the electrical activity of the brain and revealed that the lower you are in boron, you end up with characteristics similar to malnutrition and heavy metal toxicity. So make sure for your brain that you're getting 3 milligrams a day. It also impairs cognitive and psychomotor tasks. For women, there was a 2015 study of women experiencing painful menstrual cramps and found that 10 milligrams of boron daily for 2 days before menstruation for a total of 5 days, significantly reduce pain duration and severity after the intervention. It's very anti-inflammatory. Also can help you with weight, longevity, cancer, and you don't need a lot. Remember, between 3 and 10 milligrams a day of boron. It's really terrific. Then we have a study on magnesium, a very good study, and it was published in the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And it shows that most people do not have the right amount of calcium to magnesium. They generally have 10 times more calcium than magnesium. Not good. It should be about 50-50. And why do you need the magnesium? Because it is the single most important nutrient for relaxing your muscles. And it also helps with your heart. There are over 300 biochemical reactions in the body that involve magnesium. Normal muscle, nerve function, to help keep heart rhythm steady. I've helped so many people who had arrhythmias overcome their arrhythmias using magnesium and hawthorn and ginkgo biloba, which also helps with heart rhythm, and L-carnitine. So it's needed for blood sugar management. So diabetics, pre-diabetics, it's needed to keep your blood pressure down. So for all these reasons, blood pressure, stress relief, protection of your DNA, protecting your proteins in your body, your muscles, enhancing your immune system, and enhancing fat metabolism, you need that. Also, we found that when we don't have a really good varied diet, which is a good healthy plant-based diet, it ends up impacting our gut microbiota, the good bacteria in our gut. This was published in Molecular Metabolism. And at the Pennington Biomedical Research Center. And what they found was that the more diverse the diet, or the more limited the diet, you directly impact by measure. The more diverse the diet, the healthier the bacteria in your gut. Like when you're having, avocados and walnuts and string beans and broccoli and parsley. When you're having pulses and legumes and beans, you have healthy bacteria. When you're having juices, fresh made, healthy bacteria. On the other side, when you're having sugars and yeasty products, unhealthy bacteria. Very simple. University of College London and Bristol University did a study. Now, gardeners have always known that tending to the soil is a good way to relieve stress. Getting their hands a little dirty while cultivating food or flowers has a very uplifting effect. But now science is explaining the link between soil exposure and a reduction in depression. This was a unique study. I've not seen it before. University College London and Bristol University found that a benign, naturally occurring soil bacteria called Mycobacterium vacia has a proven mood-boosting antidepressant effect. In fact, mice treated directly with the Mycobacterium vacia had notably higher levels of serotonin in their brains. And previous studies have shown this exact same bacteria helped to reduce pain and nausea while increasing vitality and cognitive function in cancer patients. It has also been shown to protect children against asthma and allergies. And the British study has now linked Mycobacterium vaccia with the simultaneous of the stimulation of production of serotonin and an enhancement of the body's mood completely. So, if you're depressed, try gardening. Very important. Also, try a 5-HTP, 5-hydroxytryptophan, which has a multifunctional chemical messenger compound in the brain in a good way, but it also works in the gut, the blood, and the nerves. In fact, there are 14 different cell receptors combined to serotonin to work with it in different ways, helping your mood. And serotonin helps brain cells to communicate and regulates digestive secretions and assists with food passage through the gut and constricts blood vessels as needed. So you're getting this in the dirt. one of the reasons all of us, and I've been a gardener and a farmer, a certified organic farmer, and had the first certified organic, or not certified, but I had the first organic teaching farm outside of a university in New York State, the Fertile Earth Farm, which thousands and thousands of people came to and learned gardening. So get your hands in the soil. It's good for you. And the omega-3 fatty acids, according to this Berlin University, has a very positive effect upon aging brain. Now, mind you, you can get those from walnuts and avocados and flaxseed or from fish. But changes in cognitive function and memory decline form a normal part of aging. However, in neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's or mild cognitive impairment, the pre-dementia phase of Alzheimer's disease, these changes occur more quickly. And there are currently zero effective treatments of orthodox medicine. However, for those of us working in the field using alternative lifestyle and behavior modification, we have known for a long time that the omega-3 fatty acids, when you start to suggest people take them, they're using them, they start to give you a lot of good feedback. And that study actually proved that. So that's good information. And finally, from Concordia University in Montreal, published in the journal OnctoTarget, they found that when you look for something that has been around a long time, dating back to ancient Greece, the quest to live longer is part of our interest today. And what they did is they had an extensive biological library with over 10,000 trials to screen for plant extracts that would increase the chronological lifespan of yeast. Now, we know that grapes contain a nutrient in the grapeseed extract, the grape skin extract, plus resveratrol, 3-in-1. But this was a surprise. They tried it on yeast, and as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, cellularly speaking, aging progresses similarly in both yeast and humans, and that's why it's used in so many anti-aging models. Here's what they say. And here's what they found. They found that these results also provide new insights into mechanisms through which chemical extracted from certain plants can slow biological aging, end quote. One of these groups of molecules is the most potent longevity-extending pharmacological intervention yet described in scientific literature. It's a specific extract of willow bark. How about that? Well, willow bark was commonly used during the time of Hippocrates, when people were advised to chew on it to relieve pain and fever. The study showed that it increased the average maximum chronological lifespans of yeast by 475%, and this represents a much greater effect than the other things that are considered out there. So now you know that something the Native Americans used, white willow bark extract. How about that? That's good news. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. Now we're going to take a short audio clip. This is about screenagers. Yeah, growing up in the digital age. What did one say, quote, "I'm so distracted by my phone that I can't listen to the teacher"? Well, how common is it? Let's listen in.
It's super fun playing on my mom's phone.
It's awesome how you can watch videos,
texting and sharing photos,
playing games on my phone.
It all started with one question: what new phone to get my daughter? I knew what Tessa wanted, a smartphone. I learned that you spend on average 6.5 hours a day looking at screens. As a doctor, I decided I needed to understand the impact of all this screen time on kids. And as a mom, I needed to know what to do.
A young adolescent brain can oscillate back and forth very, very quickly, but it comes at a cost.
I'm so distracted by my phone, so it's hard to listen to a teacher and actually understand what they're saying.
What's extraordinary about the studies on multitasking is even though you're doing worse and worse on everything you're doing, you feel as though you're doing better and better.
Who's there to catch you at home? Your mom? You can outsmart her easily. No offense. Yeah, Mom, it's really hard math thing.
The game industry has designed these games to become universes where these kids enter and they don't want to come out to do math. Who wants to do math?
When I tried to stop him from playing the games, he turns into another person.
I gamed until like 1 a.m, and then I gamed 3 a.m, and then I gamed until 5 a.m.
Most of the time, he'd be on the computer, it felt like he was in a different world.
I didn't realize how much my sister cared about me.
The thing that matters is not whether you're a good person, it's how you look.
I took a picture of myself and my brother, and I sent it to him. When I got to school, I knew that everyone else knew.
This is one of the most difficult parenting issues we've ever faced. Internet consumption, video game use is very complicated to parent around.
The mistake that parents often make is that they assert their authority without explaining it in a way that makes sense to their child.
When parents tell me not to do something, I'm like, what would happen if I did it? When my parents actually have that deep conversation, it works a lot better.
It's evolution, it's the future, it's too late, I'm addicted. No, it's not too late. The research that shows human resiliency gives me hope.
My friends and I go out to eat. We'll all agree to put our phones in the middle of the table. Whoever checks their phone first has to pay for the meal.
When I study, I turn off the data on my phone, and that way I can't go on the internet and I can't get text messages.
We have to think about everywhere that kids are in the real world and how we can help educate them in those spaces. We can't just say it's on the schools, it's on the parents. We have to do this as a community.
I would add the following. For those of us who actually learn manners and understand sensitivity and how to speak with people and how to listen to people, something the younger generation, with some exceptions, are clueless on. So you can't be angry and you can't blame them for what they didn't have from their parents. We were very fortunate. We should feel blessed to have been born of parents of the greatest generation, the last generation to understand civility, understand what it is to offer service without thought of self, look at a community as vital in our part in it, what we can do to help others, not just how others can be exploited for ourselves. So it's easy to feel some angst when looking at how clueless so many young people are. It's not that they're stupid. They are not. It's an intentional ignorance. If there's no motivation to be inspired, to learn, to grow, if there's no mentor in mother, father, aunt, uncle, teacher, someone close to them on a regular basis, then they're going to honor bad choices. They're going to embrace those bad choices. Now, that bad choice has to compete against a good choice, but did they have the time and attention to understand why it's a good choice? There are parents today who are outstanding parents, but talk with them and you'll find that they all took the time to understand the consequences of not spending quality time with your children, of not setting appropriate boundaries, of not instilling a sense of responsibility for your actions. There is a outcome to every action, and it shouldn't simply be violent or negative or toxic reaction. So if we give the right input, more often than not, even against peer pressure, we'll get a better outcome. We have to stop engaging in willful ignorance. We must be patient and sit and explain why this food is good, why that one's bad. Show them. Take your children to a slaughterhouse or take them to a farm sanctuary. Let them see, if you can't go in person, there's plenty on the internet. Let them see what happens when an animals raised for food. I was premiering about 6 months ago a new film that I have that I have not released yet, except in two limited private screenings. And I was outside in the lobby waiting for the film to complete so I could do a Q&A. And this young girl came out. And I'm suggesting she's about 12 years old. And she said, I can't watch that. I can't watch that. And I said, do you eat chicken? She said, yes. I said, then you should go back in there and sit and watch it. Or stop eating chicken. I said, it's not fair to you, your health, the animal, the creature, the sentient being, to say that you don't want to know what happens to them. You just want to taste it on a plate. But then you feel bad when you see what they're suffering through, but you take no responsibility for it. And so she went back in. At the end, her mother said, I knew this would upset her, but I also knew that it could open her mind. Because young people do have the capacity to see what's wrong and engage in its other. Also, what you sacrifice to find meaning in your life. If you're not willing to sacrifice anything, you'll gain nothing. And if you're lazy, undisciplined, you'll gain nothing. There is never a good deed ever that I've seen in my life done on any major social issue or religious principle that did not have a challenge from someone else who either found it offensive or threatening to them. That means that underneath what you thought you were sharing, there are areas of life that are completely incompatible. Those are the emotional minefields. You step on them and they explode. They were there all along. That's the conditioned response. If I'm going to sacrifice something, I'd rather sacrifice based upon a principle of spiritual awareness than anything else. Because I want to live with universal truth, not individual truths. Individual truths are a kid says, I need my phone in class in case someone texts me. I've got to be instantly involved with my Facebook friends. And the teacher said, but you should be in this class to study, to learn. You're only going to have a short period of time. This is like a conveyor belt of education. And if you're not paying attention, then in the real world, you're unprepared. But I don't care about the real world. My mom, my dad, they'll take care of me. I have all these safety nets. I have all these securities. They love me. They tell me how precious and special I am. I don't have to be responsible for anything. But they and you and everyone else has to be responsible for how I feel. So right now, you're making me feel uncomfortable because you want me to do homework. How can I do homework and I have to be on the cell phone? I have to be texting stupid videos and pictures of people. And I have to show you what I ate. And I have to show you, look, this is how I'm brushing my teeth. Look at my selfie. You're making me feel really bad right now. You must be a bad teacher. So what's the new principle? The new principle in education is do away with homework. That's correct. I don't like taking tests. I don't want to stay up and be stressed. I'm stressed. I'm already taking four meds because I'm hyperactive and dyslexic and bipolar. That's what everyone tells me, and my mom agrees. They've never disagreed with authority figures. That's not how my parents work. And so I don't want to take a test and be stressed. So no more tests. So if we don't do homework and we don't have tests and we don't have to pay attention in class, what a wonderful world. And then when you're asked anything about anything, except the size of Kim Kardashian's ass, you're not going to have an answer for anything. You'll be completely unprepared. And then you'll vote for a Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. And then you start looking at all the things you're going to do wrong because you haven't been prepared to do anything right. I'm Gary Noll. Those are my thoughts and something I believe that we should spend a little time on. Now, on a more critical level, as far as understanding the world we live in, pay attention, young people, and all people. February was the hottest month for February in all of recorded history. Quote, on Saturday, NASA dropped a bombshell on a climate report. February 2016 has surpassed all rivals as the warmest seasonally adjusted month in more than a century of global record keeping. And that will become the new normal. That means you're going to have hotter winters, more El Ninos, more storms, more typhoons, more hurricanes, higher velocity hurricanes, more rain, dumping enormous amounts of water where it cannot be used, and more drought where you need water and won't have it. There is a cost to our indifference. Also, for those of you who are not paying attention to free trade, please do so. There are two candidates right now, only two, who will reject, actually three, who will reject the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And there's only one that would revoke all treaties, Jill Stein. Bernie Sanders will reject the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Good for him. Donald Trump will, too. But not Hillary and not any of the other candidates. This is from Dave Johnson. What's the problem with the free trade? I only share one page of this. The full article is posted on our website. Quote, our country's free trade agreements have followed a framework of trading away our democracy and middle-class prosperity in exchange for letting the biggest corporations dominate. There are those who say any increase in trade is good. But if you close a factory here, by the way, we've closed over 60,000 factories in the last 14 years, and lay off workers and open factories over there to make the same things the factory here used to make, bring those things into our country to sell in the same outlets, you have just increased trade because now those goods cross the border. Supporters of free trade are having a harder and harder time convincing American workers this is a good thing. Free trade is when goods and services are bought and sold between countries without tariffs, duties, and quotas. The idea is that some countries do things better than other countries, which these days basically means they offer lower labor and environmental protection costs. Allowing other countries to do things in ways that cost less frees up resources, which can theoretically be used for investment at home. Opponents of free trade ask for tariffs to protect local businesses, jobs, wages, and environment from being undermined by low-cost goods from countries where people and the environment are exploited. Free trade is generally sold as offering lower prices to consumers. It is also sold with claims that it opens up foreign markets to U.S. exporters, but it also opens up U.S. markets to imports. Does trade really open new markets? When more than 95% of our potential customers live outside our borders, we can't let countries like China write the rules for global economy. That was Barack Obama. When 95% of people who want to sell something live outside the United States, we must open foreign markets to American goods and services. That's U.S. Chamber of Commerce. 95% of Americans' potential customers live overseas, so closing ourselves off to trade is not a solution. That's Hillary Clinton. They're all wrong. It is a fact that only 5% of the world's population lives in the United States. The problem is that the line of argument that opened up trade opens markets brings with it certain misleading assumptions. It's assumption first that non-U.S. markets are not already being served by local companies. Second, it ignores that free trade also opens our own markets to others. Third, it ignores U.S. companies already can sell to most of the world's markets and vice versa. For example, the United States companies were already moving products to Mexico before NAFTA, and if local companies are already meeting the needs of U.S. and non-U.S. markets, what does a trade deal really enable? Trade deals enable open up your markets for giant predatory multinational corporations. They enable large predatory companies that have enormous economies the scale to come in and dominate those markets, putting smaller local companies out of business. So trade deals mean one thing. The biggest multinational companies get bigger and more multinational at the expense of all the other small companies. That includes the United States. And hence, you had over 6 million American workers lose their jobs, over 60,000 factories close, and more small people in the United States, small businesses are closing because they cannot compete with the slave labor of Indonesian companies and Indian companies. That's why we should be opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership and repeal all of these other treaties. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break and come back. We're going to go to our guest in a few minutes, but I just want to take a moment here. We're going to do a little fundraiser for Progressive Radio Network, and which is heard by more and more people than any other progressive radio station in the world. And you're listening to the number one radio program for progressive-minded people on the planet. Dr. Roy Spicer has a background in bacteriology. He is a water specialist, and I invited him on the program, so I didn't have to pitch my own product here. I wanted him to give you the actual scientific basis for the all-new Gary Null Ultra Filter Unit. This is all-in-one. It's a countertop or under-counter model. It's a new ceramic, what is called Metalgon filter housing. It's normally $279. Today, it's only $199. Nice to have you with us today, Roy.
Nice to be on the show, Gary.
Roy, first tell people why they should be considering this water filter compared to just drinking water out of a tap, like in Flint, Michigan, or 1,000 other places in the United States.
Well, the situation in Flint, Michigan just set off a ticking time bomb. It showed that the infrastructure of the United States is so disastrously crumbling that these toxic contaminants are getting into our drinking water. That was the worst case I've ever seen in the history of the United States, where pure lead was emitted into the drinking water at levels that I've never seen before. It was like 30,000 times higher than the government allows. But the point is, the infrastructure in the United States has similar problems, not as severe, but many mains delivering water to the United States drinking systems are corroded, they're disintegrating, and they're releasing toxins that are leaching into our drinking water. In addition, they're finding new contaminants, pharmaceuticals, unregulated contaminants, chemicals. They're adding new types of disinfection products like chloramine, which is much more toxic than chlorine. So the end result is we're drinking very toxic water. It's a toxic cocktail. So you have to step up the level of protection, and the new Gary Null AIO water filter is the most advanced filter technology available on the market. So the challenge is, what are the contaminants it removes that are different than every other filter on the market? You know, first, it was tested against lead at levels that are very high, 10 times higher than usually allowed by the government, which is 15 parts per billion. The filter was tested at 150 parts per billion, and it removed 99% of the lead at that high level, up to 1,000 gallons of water. That's a very excellent reduction of lead contaminant. In addition, chloramine, which is the new disinfection byproduct, that was tested with the filter, and it reduced 99% of chloramine at 3 parts per million, which again is a high level of chloramine, and that lasted over 700 gallons of water through the filter. So it was the two priority contaminants that had very high levels of reduction. In addition, the biggest contaminant, which is the most toxic, is fluoride. And the filter was tested with fluorosilicic acid in a city water of Chicago with other contaminants, and it reduced fluorosilicic acid over 85%, which there's no other filter on the market that I've seen that can reduce fluoride at that high level. So the three contaminants that were reduced at high levels are priority contaminants. In addition, the filter has a ceramic outer pre-filter to take out parasites and bacteria, which are very toxic to a lot of people, especially immune-deficient individuals. And it reduced these parasites 99.99%. And there are many other contaminants that are reduced by the filters, heavy metals such as aluminum, cadmium, chromium, mercury. So the all-in-one filter is a breakthrough technology in the water filtration industry that I have not seen in an unparalleled way. This is the newest, greatest filter technology that I ever reviewed, and it's worth having this to protect your health from toxic contaminants. And the nice thing about it, it's very simple to operate. It attaches right to the faucet where you can install it under the sink. And if any people have one of Gary Null's original filters, they can replace the ceramic with this new filter. So it's retrofittable into all Gary Null's units.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Roy Spicer. So if you believe that your water is safe and healthy to drink, then just drink the water out of your tap. I have not drank from any tap in decades. the Garino water filter, I will challenge this. Find me another water filter on the market that's better. I'd like to know what it is. This has the highest standards and has been independently laboratory tested at universities. And all the information is up on our website, so you can read the information carefully. If you'd like to order today out this special, I just got to make sure also I was told our original price was $320. Anyhow, no matter what the original price, you will get it at the discounted price. So today, it's $199. So it's a huge savings. Huge savings. Here's the number that you call to get it. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Now, before we go to our guests, we have one other person we want to speak to, Lou Ann Panessi. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hello, Gary. I just wanted to mention that I still have just a few spots open for the last week of our retreat coming up in April. And as many of our people that come back over and over know, we try and make each retreat a little different from the ones prior. We're always adding new people that have phenomenal talents. This time we're going to be having a Zumba instructor that actually is a nurse practitioner who's integrated, you know, yoga moves into the Zumba. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And
she does something unusual. She uses a natural, non-toxic, holistic approach to help get people off psychiatric drugs. Interesting.
That's true.
But
yes.
But she's going to be doing a different Zumba class each day. We're also going to be we're looking right now for a master potter to show people how to do pottery and where they can actually make their pottery so they take it home. That's one of the things we're looking at. Cooking classes, gardening classes, homesteading classes, counseling, exercise, meditation, Tai Chi, power walking, all forms of yoga. It's
pool
going
aerobics.
To be spectacular. Pool aerobics and mineral water. Just laying in that deep mineral water from one of the oldest, largest aquifers in the area. And that's the water that was used by the native people for over 700 years because of what they believe that water did for them. And that's the water you're going to be drinking. That's the water you're going to be in the pool every day. And so it's going to be a wonderful week. I'm looking forward to it. And we have one clip we want to play, a short clip, of some of the people who attended one of the last retreats here.
My name is Manuel. I just spent a week with Gary's retreat. I came here with feelings of gratitude, tears of gratitude, because I had been wanting to come for many, many years. I listened to Gary's radio show, and I bought most of his products, which I enjoy. But this has been an experience that I had never expected. I have my myeloma, and I came here to experience something different. And I learned to really think positive. I thought I was talking positive, but I really wasn't. The lectures were tremendously helpful to me, that I can do anything that I want to do. That's the main thing that I got. The food was excellent, and I slept well, and I feel I'm getting better. I feel that my life is going to turn around permanently. I also had energy healing, where my legs swole up. The energy did something for me. That's all I can say. Thank you.
Just one of the people who were there. And I want people to come with an idea that start a new chapter in your life. Start over. A lot can happen in life when we open ourselves up to the best we can be as human beings. So, Luann, that the first week is full, no room there, and we only have 1 week. We're only doing 2 weeks. Give the number, please.
Yes, it's 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. I interview every single person to make sure this is the right event for them. So that you know that when you gather with everyone, it's going to be a group of very enthusiastic, open-minded, upbeat people. So
good.
It's going to be fun. So my number is 631-504-6198. Give me a call.
Thank you, Luann Panessi. Now let's go over and say hello to our guest who is standing by, Professor Joseph Hickman. And he's in Green Bay, Wisconsin today, I believe. And we're going to talk about the burn pits of Afghanistan and Iraq and the Defense Department's denial over its threats to human life and the environment. Nice to have you with us today.
Hello, I'm happy to be here.
Arguably, media attention about the widespread use of burn pits in Afghanistan, and particularly Iraq, came on the heels of the death of Vice President Biden's son from the rapid development of a brain cancer shortly after returning from his base near Baghdad. And this base was heavily exposed to mountain-high piles of toxic waste being burned in open-air areas known as burn pits. Now, you've noted about 250 such facilities located alongside or near military bases where thousands of tons of junk and waste are being destroyed upon order of the Department of Defense. There are tens of thousands of military and civilian personnel, not to mention the countless number of Afghani and Iraqi families, have been exposed. So please take your time and tell us first what a burn pit is, what would be the most common kinds of toxic substances burned in these facilities. The forum is yours.
Okay. Well, the burn pits, people don't realize too often how much trash war accumulates. Every soldier on the ground accumulates approximately 10 pounds of trash a day. That's not including the construction that is going on, building military bases, the bombings and the rubble that's left over from our initial attacks. War creates tons and tons and tons of trash. Soon after the wars began in Iraq and Afghanistan, the commanders had a very difficult task, what to do with this trash and how to handle it. Well, DOD's response was to combat this trash was to create open-air burn pits, which is something that is completely illegal in the United States. They would burn all the trash in these burn pits. Some of these burn pits are not your backyard burn pits. Some of them are as large as 10 acres. And, you know, they house 45, 50,000 troops on these bases. So they would burn up to as much as 50 tons of trash a day. They burn constantly, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And they burned anything and everything in these burn pits. They burned plastics, styrofoams, medical waste, human body parts. They burned anything that was considered trash was thrown in these, and they were burned up and let go in the atmosphere. So it was thousands of toxins and carcinogenics that were being burned, and these burn pits were directly on the bases themselves. They were in close proximity to where soldiers and service members lived and where they worked. And this plume of toxic smoke would invade them on a daily basis, and usually constant.
Recount your personal search and investigations about those bases where veterans suffered the more debilitating illnesses, and how you discovered the military and its private defense contractors, such as Kellogg, Brown and Root, or Halliburton, built these pits on known remnants of Saddam Hussein's chemical weapons stockpiles. And what chemicals would this have been? Sarin or mustard gas or something else?
Okay, well, I first started looking into the burn pits over, I came forward in 2010 and spoke about, out against the abuse in Guantanamo and certain things that I witnessed there. Soon after I did that report, hundreds of soldiers, I would say about 100 soldiers, contacted me, and they were offering support. They were glad I got the story out. And I was getting calls from soldiers that were stationed at other detainee holding facilities all around the world, in Iraq and Afghanistan. And one day, a soldier contacted me, and he was coughing while he was talking about Camp Taji. Camp Taji was the largest detainee holding facility in Iraq. And I asked him finally from this hacking cough he had, I said, are you okay? Do you have a cold? He said, no, I brought some of the burn pits back from Iraq with me. I said, burn pits, what do you mean? And he went on to explain what they were. he said a lot of soldiers are sick. You should do a story about this and contact them as well. So I started contacting people, and it became a domino effect. It was tens, and then it was dozens, and then it was over 100, and then ended up being over 1,000 soldiers I spoke to on the subject. Well, I knew the burn pits were bad, but I wanted to do a statistical study on the burn pits, where the soldiers that were really sick with rare forms of cancers and rare bronchial diseases, where they were located, where they were stationed, and I wanted to get a comparison to see if other burn pits were worse than others. Well, the statistical study was done by Seton Hall Law School, Center for Policy and Research. What we discovered is the most horrifying ailments these soldiers were victims of, with the rare cancers and the bronchial illnesses, the severe ones, came from five select bases in Iraq. And when we did research on those bases, we found that they were all former Saddam Hussein chemical weapons facilities in the 80s and 90s. So what happened is we went into this country, we bombed it, and then we bombed these bases, and then we rebuilt them on former chemical weapons facilities. And a lot of the symptoms from these rare illnesses are showing symptoms that you would see from mustard gas, specifically. There's one rare bronchial illness that these soldiers have that they were all stationed at one of these five facilities that have this illness, and all of them, one of the main causes of this illness is mustard gas.
Just a few short follow-up questions. Approximately how many military personnel would have, you guesstimate, have been exposed to the burn pit toxicity? And are there any reliable estimates of the health toll attributed to burn pit exposure, especially because it's you're in the moment with it, which is bad, but then a lot of those toxins go into your system, and they can stay with you for years. So you may not see the full impact of being exposed to a burn pit, much like radiation or cigarette smoke, for 5 or 10 or 15 years.
That's correct. Right now, a few years back, 2014, the VA created a registry where soldiers could sign up, and they would, it's a registry based off the old Agent Orange registry, where they could sign up and they would list their symptoms, and the VA would study this and years later come up with a solution for these soldiers. Right now, we know that over 60,000 soldiers have signed up saying that they feel like they are they're ill from their exposure to the burn pits. So that's over 60,000, but those numbers aren't even accurate because the VA won't consider soldiers that have already died of their exposure. They won't accept the widows registering those soldiers on the burn pits. So the number is probably much higher. These toxins, you're right, some you'll see immediately, and some we won't see for 5 or 10 years. But the problem is VA has not come up with a solution on how to treat these veterans, and they have denied them benefits in practically every case.
That shouldn't surprise anyone. My final thought, if you would address it, there are very clear environmental laws for burning high toxic substances and properly disposing of them, and this should be done in closed incendiaries that contain fumes and prevent them from being released into the environment. And burn pits are prohibitive on our military bases. But for some reason, these laws were ignored in Iraq and Afghanistan. Personally, I regard companies such as Bechtel and Halliburton and KBR and the private mercenary firms as utterly corrupt. That's my personal opinion. So it would not surprise me that KBR, who I understand is responsible for the Iraq burn pits, finds ways to reduce their cost, and even if it means violating environmental regulations. And KBR denies responsibility, claiming there's no scientific evidence to support a relationship between these health conditions and cancers and burn pits. So how was it that these pits were employed? Who's ultimately responsible, the military or the private defense contractors or anyone? And then speak about the level of denial you discovered at the Department of Defense, the military commanders such as General Petraeus, and the private firms and their rejection of any association between burn pits and the illnesses and deaths of veterans, not to mention countless men, women, and children in the Middle East.
Well, yes. The KBR was responsible for constructing and operating most of the burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. They also, DOD, they gave them a no-bid, $5 billion contract to do it. So both are equally responsible. There is a class action lawsuit right now by soldiers that are trying to sue Halliburton and KBR for their negligence on operating these burn pits. And they're running into a legal limbo with this lawsuit because KBR is saying DOD gave us all direction on what to do, where to build them, and what to burn. DOD is staying completely silent on the issue, which puts then the burden of proof on the soldiers to prove that they're sick from these toxic burn pits. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out if you're burning 50 tons of trash a day that and you're burning anything and everything in open-air burn pits, it's going to make people sick. It's going to have an environmental effect. But the DOD continues to take responsibility for that. And the VA also continues to take responsibility for that. Since we left Iraq in 2010, cancer rates are up over 100% in Iraq. In Fallujah, outside of one of the worst military burn pits that was in Iraq, they're seeing birth defects at a rate that's extremely alarming, and they're seeing birth defects that are so horrible they don't even have medical names for them yet. Soldiers that were deployed in Iraq are coming home 6 times higher rate of birth defects than soldiers that were never deployed to Iraq. It's a major issue that no one is addressing and denying. I know my book has been banned from all the military-based PXs and Navy exchanges. They will not sell my book. They're in complete denial mode right now of what is going on.
Well, your message is getting out today, Joe, because this is going all over the world. The book is The Burn Pits, The Poisoning of America's Soldiers. The website is burnpit360.org. Let's become aware of the issue. Then let's become participants in helping the soldiers and the citizens exposed to at least have their conditions acknowledged and that it was due to the burn pits, and then help them. Joe, thank you for being on today, and all the best in your battle.
Oh, thank you.
Professor Joseph Hickman, and he is at Seton Hall University School of Law and Senior Research Fellow at the Center for Policy and Research. He was a former Marine and Army Sergeant who worked in a lot of these areas, and he has a story to tell. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.